Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of In the Eyes of Truth. Today with us back is our friend Regis Tremblay. He is a director of documentary films. If you haven't seen that, In Exile, because, you know, telling the truth doesn't always pay. It does make you some enemies in certain areas. He's now in Crimea, for those that don't know. And Regis, which goes well with the theme of today's show, is formerly a Catholic priest, who's now Orthodox Christian, but is a man of God, any which way you look at it. We go to the theme of America's new golden calf.
Hello, dear friends. Just want to remind you, if you like this video or you like what you hear, click like, subscribe if you haven't subscribed yet. Send it to your friends. Let's grow this channel. Maybe we can finally hit it up to 100,000. That'd be a good round number for the summer. So let me know, leave some comments, and give a thumbs up. So look forward to seeing you in the next video. Cheers.
Something feels off. Same news, same noise, different day.
Maybe you're just in the wrong place, mate.
Wait, what?
Maybe you've been here before.
I was what? I am a Cossack.
Wait, I remember this. I was a merchant.
Okay, this is getting weird. I was a Russian musician.
Okay. This is NOT what I expected.
Yeah? Happens to everyone.
We just moved. Moscow Connect helped with everything.
Visa, paperwork, life is sorted.
Wait, it's actually that simple?
Maybe it's not about escaping.
Maybe it's about finding where you actually belong.
Regis, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks, Das. It's always great and a lot of fun to be with you.
Thank you. If people want to find you, where can they find you?
Well, we're on Substack at Regis Tremblay, on YouTube as Alfredo Baldic, AlfredoBolduc. It's an alias, Das, because my original YouTube channel was permanently deleted about 5 years ago, because of stuff they didn't like I was publishing.
Yeah, they do that, don't they?
Yeah.
The freedom of speech thing and all that. Well, Regis, you know, we are witnessing what the Romans would have called the cult of the emperor. We see a new emperor rising up. I guess the lucky thing is that he's not all that young, so he's not going to be there for a very long time. But who knows? Building up his cult of personality. There's talk about Trump's new ballroom that's going to be all in gold, kind of gypsy style, from what people are saying, at $1 billion. No, nothing major. His president of the library, supposedly he's going to have about a 50-foot statue of himself in it. He's got the Arc de Triomphe. I'm not quite sure for which triumph he's planning on putting up, and so on and so on. And we see the Christian Zionist heretics, they are basically have appointed him the anointed of God. Whether or not he believes in God, I'm not quite sure, but he's now the anointed of God for at least 40 million people in the United States, if not more. What can you say to that?
Well, Stas, not living in the United States and observing it from where I am in Yalta, in the Crimea, I can't even laugh at this anymore. It's really pretty disgusting. I think, you know, it's obvious that Trump is a malignant narcissist. It's all about himself. He's got this outsized ego, gold-plated office in the White House, gold toilets.
What? By the way, one second. What is it with the West and gold toilets?
Hey, I have no idea. He just it represents wealth to him, I guess. It represents he's like an emperor back in the days of the Roman Empire or in the European monarchy. I think this is what he's trying to project, his greatness. But you know, my own feeling is he's playing this out in his own mind. I you know, his popularity, according to what I read recently, has dropped to 34% in the United States over a number of issues, ranging from his immigration policy, his sending ICE to many cities in the United States to round up and deport men who have been here for many years, have no criminal record, and he's claiming he's making America safe again. And, you know, he's made a statement recently that he doesn't even care about the financial situation of most Americans. He just said that. So I think he's living in his own universe. You know, his golden statue that he, I guess it's golden, that he wants to put up in his library. And I think his library is laughable. What's it going to be? Cartoons? Is it going to be a collection of his Truth Social memes or posting?
Hey, those could be a couple volumes by now. That maybe some of the children will have to learn and study in school.
Yeah, well, I also wonder if he's going to have all the Epstein files in his library.
Yeah, somewhere in a vault deep down under.
Yeah, any pictures of him with, you know, teenage girls or younger? I mean, I think it's laughable. I do not think the majority of American people, I don't think they respect him. I don't think they like him. I think many of the people that voted for him were not pure MAGA believers. They were, I believe, people who were independent, who believed two things. Number one, that he would end the war in Ukraine, which he promised throughout his campaign. He was going to end it on his first day in office. Now we've gone 15 months, and there's been no change in the war in Ukraine. And the second thing, and actually there's a third thing, but the second thing was he was going to make America great again, bring back industry to America, create millions of jobs. And he hasn't done any of that. And he promised no more wars.
Well, I think those people actually were MAGA, if you think about it, because that's what MAGA was supposed to be. They believed in that. But the people that are left are absolute Trump groupies.
Yeah, and it's a cult. It really is a cult. It's a worship of this demagogue. And I don't believe it's a large group of people anymore. I really don't. I think, you know, it's just like Jonestown. these people have swallowed the Kool-Aid, and they look at Trump like as a messiah, as you mentioned in the opening. They see him as some kind of a god. He's even posted Photoshop images of himself as Jesus. You know, I mean, this is totally repulsive. You've got to be really deranged to want to believe it, anything about this guy. And, you know, you and I both know, living away, Trump is being ridiculed everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
When we were at family dinner on May 9th, and the discussion at the dinner table was about a lot of political things, geopolitical things, but of course it came back to Trump, and it's laughable. They have no respect for this guy. They think that he's a buffoon, and most people think that he's very dangerous. This is people in my circle of friends here in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think, you know, all of this brouhaha about Trump being, you know, the savior, being the messiah, being the one who's like the emperor of the United States, who's gonna make it strong and number one again, that's just not believable by most Americans, and certainly people around the world don't believe that at all.
But you still have all these Christian Zionists. I mean, I know several of them, and you know they post on Facebook, they post on other things. I mean, these aren't bots. I know these people. Some of them I went to school with, but they are absolute true believers. This is the second coming, as far as they're concerned.
Yeah, but how large are they? How influential? I really question their influence and their importance. I realize they do have a great deal of influence with IPAC, with the Jewish lobby. They're bound at the hip. So I don't want to dismiss them as not having any power or influence. I think they do, but I don't think they're large in numbers. Allied with IPAC and the Jewish lobby, they're very powerful.
No, there's quite a few members of the administration, of members of Congress, that fit into this. And I'm not just talking about the average member of Congress that's paid and bought for by
IPAC.
By IPAC, yes. Well, you know, the problem is the U.S. Congress is so well set up to be bought by somebody. IPAC just happens to have the deeper pockets. The Saudis were buying members of Congress up left and right for a while, too. It's probably still are. It's just, you know, big pharma, big whatever. Do you think, what do you think brings these people to actually look at him? I mean, he's not a holy man. He's not what you would consider a saint or anything close to that. What do you think brings these people to believe in him as the anointed of God?
That's a stretch. And I think you have to be really of a cult mentality to buy that. There's really not much substance in my mind that would portray him as a Christian, for one. He says he's a Christian, but he also says he's the greatest U.S. president for Israel. You know, he's bragged about that. You know, the Israelis reject Christianity. Jesus was not the Messiah. And, you know, so people have to be really, as I say, a Latin expression, minus habens, having very little left up here in the head to be able to buy that shit. Pardon my language, but that's what it is.
It's amazing to watch. I mean, it's absolutely amazing to watch.
Well, you know what I would like to ask you about? Because I think it's the most significant thing that has emerged out of Russia in the last 2 weeks. And I know you're aware of it. Sergei Karaganov.
You're going to ask Karaganov.
Well, of course. I mean, he is one of the leading conservative hardliners that has been a friend of Putin for many years. He was an influencer doing the breakup of the Soviet Union. So that's like 26 years this guy has had an influence on what's going on. He is saying that Russia has got to give the Europeans a smack because he sees what they're doing as a declared strategic defeat on Russia to steal its resources. Everybody's talking about this over here now. I mean, this was really, I think, a bombshell of a report, that an article that he wrote that was all over the place. On RT in English, it got a great deal of views and comments. And then, Stas, 2 days later, Dmitry Medvedev, former president of the Russian Federation, when Putin pulled out for 4 or 5 years, whatever it was, he's now the deputy director of the Russian what is it called? But I'm having a brain freeze here.
Security Council.
Yeah, Security Council, a huge position. He has been speaking out publicly for months, showing a really hardline stance, where previously he was accused of being a Western-leaning capitalist liberal. He seems to have undergone an epiphany and now has become a hardliner. He's basically saying the same thing. Russia has got to smack down some of these Europeans in Brussels, in Berlin, in London, and in Paris before it's too late. Stas, I wonder how you're reacting to this. My reaction to that is really is unbelievable, because I think what it shows to me is that there have been people in the Kremlin who have been Western-leaning, capitalist sympathizers. On one hand, on the other hand, you have the people now like Karaganov and Medvedev who are coming out publicly. They're patriotic, conservative Russians and hardliners who believe that the patience and the restraint that Russia has been exercising over these past 7 or 8 years has been misguided and wrong. They believe Russia needs to act and act forcibly now. I see this as a tremendous challenge for President Putin and for the military. And I also think for the foreign ministry. I mean, those are my thoughts on what this is all about. I think this could be a game changer. And then, Stas, President Putin says the other day in his address to the nation on May 9th that this war in Ukraine is close to an end. I don't see that. But when I try to connect the dots between these three, I'm just wondering what really is going on.
Well, yeah, I can't say what's going on as far as whether or not this conflict's going to end. From a military standpoint, it's still pretty far away from ending. From the point of Karaganov, you know, I thought I was more or less militant. I seem to be very pacifist compared to him. No, I mean, I said from day one, you know, when Slovakia... NY was in Slovakia. Slovakia was the first one to give tanks to Ukraine. The reason was Slovakia was the first to give tanks is if everybody's waiting to see what Moscow would do. If Moscow had slapped the bejesus out of Slovakia, that would have ended that right there on that place. There would have been no more heavy equipment going over. Everybody would have been afraid. Moscow didn't do that. And the gates of hell were open and everything started flowing in. Should have hit him back then. And I've been saying that he's fast to go toward nuclear weapons. Honestly, I'm not, for very obvious reasons, because once you start going down that escalation, it's pretty hard to stop. One thing, if you make an example, say taking out Lvov, and you make an example to the Europeans that this is what's going to happen to your cities. It's a whole different thing if you start actually hitting European cities. I'm pretty sure the U.S. isn't going to surrender any of its cities to defend something in Europe. You don't know with the French if they've got enough brain power not to do something like that. Conventional weapons, I think, are more than enough to make the point, at least to make the point. Whether or not they take the point, I don't know. So there's that. I guess we'll live and see. But, I mean, and if you look at it, I mean, the Europeans, the most tyrannical Europeans, they don't believe in God, but they're still a cult following. As a man of the church, what do you see when you look at that? When you look at the Satanism or the satanic references and the cult-like behavior in the rest of Europe, the non-Russian Europe.
Yeah, well, it's very disturbing, and the only word that I can describe it is satanic or evil. I don't think there's any other way of looking at it. And I think, you know, from my own experience living here and my participation in the Russian Orthodox Church, I can understand that this is another level of threat to Russia. It's another level of what they call these European liberal values that are sweeping across the West. You know, and that's over and above the belligerence of the United States and the West towards Russia. Anyway, Stas, enough on that. I want to talk about something that I know you're interested in. Donald Trump is on his way to China. And let's talk a little bit, if we can, about whether Trump has any cards left at all to be a bully on Xi Jinping in China. He's going over there with a whole plane load of top CEOs from major corporations, from the banks, from IT. And I think he's trying to do a show of force.
What kind of force do you think he's trying to show? Half these companies
look at bankrupt. I'm bringing all the power and might of the United States, not only the government, but also corporations, iTech, the military industrial complex. Is he trying to go over there and puff out his chest? At the same time, China has listed four conditions. Don't cross our red lines. Do not talk to us about Taiwan. Do not talk to us about lack of democracy and violation of human rights. You know, do not talk to us about threats and sanctions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the Chinese are basically saying to Trump, you know, we're allowing you to come here. We're going to let you talk, but really don't expect too much from us.
Well, you know, the U.S. that lectures others on human rights, what do you think the level or the state of human rights in the U.S. is right now?
Yeah, not only in the United States with, I don't know, a couple of million people homeless, the middle class is being absolutely reduced to almost nothing. So in addition to homelessness, we've got this extreme parity difference between the wealthy and the rest of America. And, you know, the racism that exists in America, especially with Trump's crackdown, as he says, on immigration, he wants to make America safe again. You know, these immigrants, they're the ones that are here doing jobs that are below Americans.
Oh, no, don't go there. Those jobs are not below Americans. Just like the jobs here are not below Russians. I don't buy into that for a second. They're below the pay that these companies are willing to pay because they can get around the job market. But look, Americans picked fruit, poor Americans picked fruit every year until the 1980s, when all of a sudden you start bringing in the Mexicans and others in mass quantities who are working for even cheaper. This isn't about, you know, below your dignity to work. It's below the fact that they don't want to pay you. But there's somebody who's pseudo-legal in the country is willing to work for less.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're the ones that are roofing our houses. I shouldn't say our houses, but the houses in America. They're the ones that are picking up garbage. They're the ones that are working in the hotels as janitors and the maids that clean the rooms. And these people are not violent criminals. And yet Trump has got America divided over this, that these, he calls them illegal aliens, but they're actually undocumented people. They're not aliens. And they've come here, Stas, because of America's wars, coups, violent insurrections in their country, in Central and South America. They're coming from Africa. They're coming from Vietnam. I mean, it's all the result of American colonialism and wars. And so I see that as just another terrible thing that Trump has used to divide Americans. And and to really show its racist underbelly against people of color, it's very disturbing to me. And you know, I'm sure you're following what's happening all across the EU, all across Europe, a terrible problem with immigration. You know, it first started with Islamic people, Muslims from Libya, from Iran, you know, the Middle East, escaping Israeli and American violence in their countries. And they were going by boat across the Mediterranean to places like Italy. And so it's been all this forced migration, and it's caused the Europeans, all of them, a tremendous strain on their economy. Forget what's happening to their economies because of not wanting Russian fuel. I talked to a friend and had him on my show last night from Dublin, Ireland. He told me there's 125,000 Ukrainians in Ireland. I was shocked. But there's millions of them across all of Europe, and they're all on the dole. They're all collecting government social benefits. And when you look at what's happening in Europe to their economy, they've got this issue that's weighing heavily on all the ordinary citizens. And just in the Netherlands, Netherlands and Germany, there have been huge protests with violence against the housing of immigrants from Ukraine. And so I think this is a horrible problem that is exacerbating the economic situation, not only in Europe, but in the United States. And, you know, there's not too many people that are talking about this.
That's true. That's true. But look, I mean, outside of Ukrainians, look who else gets imported into Europe. These aren't, when you're bringing in a population of military age males with almost no women, no children. And then Germany, I remember the Minister of Labor said after Merkel let in a million people in 1 year, which is insane. A million people have absolutely no cultural similarity, either in religion or just plain culture. After what, about 8 years, less than 50% of them have found jobs. The rest are just leeching off. And why not? I mean, if you look at human nature, why not? You know, the government's willing to give them money, money that other people have to earn and pay taxes. And then they just get a free life.
So I know this is another topic that you've commented on. And recently I've seen some of your interviews. The threat of nuclear war. You and I both know that the United States has a nuclear doctrine of the first strike capability. They've had it for decades now. They haven't changed it. There's no other country in the world, specifically Russia and China, who have a no strike capability.
I'll correct you on that. There's no other country with declared nuclear weapons that has a no first strike doctrine. There's okay. One other country that has a first strike doctrine, but supposedly doesn't have nuclear weapons.
Which is Israel.
Which is Israel, yes, of course.
Yeah.
It doesn't have them, but you know, it's ready to strike, you know, 20, 30 targets with them. So, as ludicrous as that is.
So how realistic do you think this is? And from a Russian perspective, with Russia being surrounded on its western borders by, I don't know, some dozen or more military bases, including now Finland and Sweden and Denmark being really militarized. And then the Europeans encroaching in the Caucasus, in Armenia, on that... Eastern Front, of Russia. How must Russia be looking at that, Stas? Now, I'm asking you this from the point of a military guy, and I'm asking you this from the point of being a Russian.
Well, I think you already listened to the interview from Kakanov on how most people see it. I don't know if I'm quite ready to go drop nukes on the other side, but you know, it's getting there. But I mean, look, what do you see with Americans? You know, you've spent the vast majority of your life there. They don't seem to realize anymore what nuclear war is, do they now?
Well, I think they never did. Some of us who are alive during the Cuban missile crisis during Kennedy's administration with Khrushchev in Cuba, we were terrified. Most of the rest of the world were terrified of what could happen. And I mean terrified. We were in school and we were instructed when the air raid went off to crawl under our desks. Now, how ridiculous was that? I remember that distinctly. I was in high school, first or second year high school when that happened. And yet, when that blew over, in the years since, there doesn't seem to be any fear of nuclear war anywhere in the world. And Stas, it was the reason that I came to Russia in 2016. I was finishing a feature documentary about the possibility of nuclear war between the United States and Russia. I was very afraid at that time, and I had to come to Russia to find out if Russians were that crazy, were that evil, that they would want to engage in nuclear war. Well, my eyes were opened. I saw none of that hostility, none of those threats, none of that belligerence anywhere that I traveled in Russia at that time. And I titled that film 30 Seconds to Midnight. Yep. At that time, the Doomsday Clock, the Bureau of Atomic Scientists, had the clock at 3 minutes to midnight. And I said, no way. I don't know if they're just trying to not scare everybody. But in the years since, they moved it down to, I don't know, somewhere maybe around a minute. And I had it at 30 seconds in 2016. I thought it was that close.
Where do you have it now?
If I were to publish that film today, it would be titled The Final Countdown, 5 seconds and holding.
Yeah, yeah. You think this is, you know, the general trend in the U.S., and to a degree in England and other countries, has been to devalue education. I mean, America's official statistics for last year was 21% total literacy, 32% partial literacy. Do you think that's the reason why people no longer seem to be even thinking about nuclear weapons? Or is it maybe that they've seen too many blasts in Hollywood movies and it's just like, eh?
Yeah. I would answer it this way. I do feel that the American educational system from early school through postgraduate university studies has been not only dumbed down but corrupted. The other thing that I think that has happened, and it's been going on, well, Stas, I think it's been going on since the first Europeans came to the American continent in the 15th century. They believed that they were exceptional. They believed that their mission was blessed by God, and it was affirmed by Pope Alexander VI's doctrine of domestic. Well, it gave the right to the European colonizers to be able to claim the land for their own and to subjugate the original people that were here. And that doctrine of discovery is what it's called, really led to the genocide of hundreds of millions of Native Americans in North and South America. It led to the theft of land and resources and labor. They imported slaves, and America's greatness was built on the backs of slavery. And when you trace this American myth of being exceptional and favored by God, you can understand how Americans have been totally duped by this myth. In fact, I would even call it a fabricated lie about what America is and who Americans are. We're a model for the entire world of democracy and freedom. And this combined with, it goes hand in hand with the educational system, because ever since I was a little kid, when my father was a little kid and our grandparents were little kids, you know, we celebrated America's greatness through its wars, through its conquest, through the belief that we learned in school that we were the good guys, through television. You grew up as a young man in America. The early Western movies portrayed the cowboys with white hats as the good guys and the Indians as the bad guys.
Well, there weren't that many of them left that old movies. It's the John Wayne movies, but, you know, it's...
Yeah, well, and then later on, after World War II, Stas, well, I'm going to age myself here, but I was born in 1945. And the 1950s were the best years that America's really ever experienced. But every one of us kids had a World War II metal military helmet. We had goggles, we had backpacks, and we had guns that were either plastic or made out of wood. And we were playing army in the neighborhood woods, killing Germans. I mean,
so was I when I was a kid in the Soviet Union.
Yeah. So but when you understand how all of this combined together has created this indifference in American people, or this belief that they're better than everybody else, you can understand today, I think, why so many Americans are not involved, are apathetic. All of the peace groups that were once pretty much united during the Vietnam War and brought that war to an end, they're divided today. They've been infiltrated, and they're no longer effective. And so basically, in answer to your question, this is how the American people have been dumbed down, incapable of critical thinking, much less breaking through the mythology, the myths, and the lies about their history. I've lost so many friends from childhood through high school, through university, who become successful professionals as doctors, as lawyers, as business people, as attorneys, who cannot break through the fog of this mythology. And to me, that's the only way that I can understand how Americans are so disconnected from what's going on, so passive, and really so apathetic, I would have to say.
Yeah, you know, it was described to me once, well, as a book I was reading, when the Spanish and the Portuguese arrived in Latin America, well, particularly South America, and they went into the jungles and they saw the people in the jungles. The question that went back to the Pope was, are these smart monkeys or are these people? Because if these are people, that's a whole different level of responsibility, even on the conquistadors and so on. And the Pope said, no, these are people. So now the Catholics in the South were limited with what they could do, because at the end they're supposed to bring them to God, convert them, teach them, and bring them to God. Well, the Protestants didn't have any such problems when they arrived in the North. To them, you know, it's forest devils or whatever you want to call them. They didn't have any questions about their status versus the status of the Indians in the North.
Well, yeah, and the Spanish and the Portuguese brought Catholic missionaries with them.
Right.
And their whole focus was to try to convert these savages, these pagans, to Christianity.
Oh, some of those pagans were cannibals. Let's not forget that. There's still a lot of them in the jungles.
But what my point is that throughout Central and South America, the Catholic Church is very strong.
Yeah.
In many of those countries. And that's all because of the Christian missionaries, basically Spanish and Portuguese, who came and lived and worked there and are still there today. We didn't see that so much in North America, except in Mexico,
right.
Except what was formerly Mexico and then became Arizona and California.
Yep.
You still see the remains of Spanish missions and Spanish-speaking churches. And there's a tremendous Latin American community in all of those states on the West Coast. But I guess the point that I'm trying to make is this is part of the mythology that really has conditioned Americans to think that everything that's happened there was right and was justified by God. It was their destiny. And this is a really big problem, in my opinion, why Americans can't see through this and why they can't resist what's been happening in their government, but especially today with the Trump administration, which has amplified this. I mean, it's like America's on steroids now.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you're right. You're absolutely right. So what do we got to look forward to? The Trump cult growing or the Trump cult burning out?
No, that's a really good question. And there's a couple of levels to that. Number one, what everybody's talking about, because his approval rating has dropped to around 34%. The majority of Americans, supposedly 60 to 70%, are against the war in Iran. They're really tired of this war in Ukraine. I think that, Americans are really disappointed that Trump has not come through on his promise to end these wars. The other thing that I think maybe is hopeful, I think a number of psychiatrists, doctors have come out publicly and called for the removal of Trump from the presidency because he is mentis compost. He's deranged. He's incapable of governing the country. They claim that he has dementia. And I'm sure you're aware of that. And so I think there's a movement in the country where people are talking about the 25th Amendment.
Yeah, but the chance that's never been used, that takes the majority of the cabinet, and then that can be Trump can resist via the Supreme Court.
Well,
if he doesn't go, their careers are over.
No, I agree with that. But the point that I'm making is the conversation about this is growing not only in the Congress, the House of Representatives, but in the Senate, but across the country on a lot of different levels. So those are two things that I think that we could look forward to that will end this. And the third thing, Stas, and I'm really serious about this, I'm not sure that Trump at the age of 79, I think now pushing 80, is in physically good shape. His diet of double quarter pounders with cheese, extra large fries, and 16-ounce Coca-Colas definitely is having an effect on his health.
And you think?
I'm absolutely sure of it. And I know that there's a handful of people, including medical professionals, that think that he may have a short time to live. And that's not because of an assassination. It's because of his being in very poor health. I think, Stas, neither one of us are medical professionals, but it's been well known that the most stressful job in the world is the President of the United States. I don't know that any president has been under more pressure than Donald Trump.
Yeah, probably by mistakes that he made himself.
Agreed. But Stas, I mean, Kennedy must have been under tremendous stress during the missile crisis. But he at least was an adult in the room and was able to restrain himself and the military. And he was able to talk with Nikita Khrushchev.
Yep.
But then you look at every president since then, and I'm talking presidents that were up to their eyeballs in corruption, Ronald Reagan, Iran-Contra. You look at Jimmy Carter with his failed attempt to rescue those American diplomats in Iran in the 1980s. And you look at the other presidents who've been engaged in wars, extrajudicial assassinations, CIA coups. None of these guys, including both Bushes, including Obama, who actually bragged about how he liked killing, and he had his Tuesday kill list that he picked out someone to kill that day.
Well, and no, then you look he liked giving the orders to kill. He didn't do any of the killing himself.
You know, you're right. You're right. And then, you know,
the power trip.
You look at Biden, who basically was, you know, he was not capable. And then you have Trump. And Trump is wrapped around the axle everywhere you look, in Ukraine, in Iran, in the Mediterranean. You know, he wants to take on Cuba. He claims Venezuela is going to be the 51st state. He wants to take on Greenland. He is threatening Europe by pulling out thousands of military guys, which I don't think is going to happen.
Well, and then you look at this, pull him out of there, but
yeah, but then you look at what's going on with him in China. This guy has got to be under enormous stress. And how does he deal with it? I think he deals with it by projecting himself, as you and I started out, as a king, as an emperor, as someone who is almost omnipotent, who's blessed by the gods. And Stas, my own belief is I think his time is running out.
Yeah, I think so. I really do think so. Speaking of running out of time, we have run out of time. Hitting the 15-minute mark, which at this point I got a next engagement. I'm sorry for that. But yeah, you're right. Yeah, he's you know, I've heard it from several, I've read it from several medical professionals that he's not in the best of shape. He's got what looks like symptoms of various chronic diseases, which
we didn't even get to talk about his ankles, his hands, his huge gut, his lack of exercise.
Oh geez, yeah, yeah. His lack of exercise.
Yeah,
yeah, that's Trump. That's definitely Trump. He's yeah, I don't, you know, he is in horrible condition from the outside if you're looking at it. He's got to be under massive stress. You're absolutely right. He's got to be under absolutely massive stress. But he wanted that job. I don't know. I mean, how much stress compared to his ego? 2 minute videos of things blowing up, that's your whole military brief for the day, Mr. President, as you're waging a war on the other side of the world. I mean, that can't give you that much stress. Oh, look, things blew up. Give me some popcorn. As opposed to, no, that's our stuff blowing up, Mr. President, not their stuff. That I think would give him some stress. But he's got head tests to make sure he doesn't get that kind of stress.
Yeah, that's a whole different show.
Oh yeah, dude, geez, that is that's yeah. Well, Regis, I am very thankful that you could come on. I'm hoping to, in the next couple of months I will be in Crimea, so
Oh, wow.
yeah, we can meet up, have a beer, have another
Well,
beer, vacation.
if you're coming to Crimea, forget the beer. We have to feast on Crimean wines, red or white or champagne. Not when you come to Crimea, Stas. Even if you're a beer guy,
I am a beer guy
we're gonna.
and a Scotch whiskey guy.
Oh well, I can't do that anymore. But
We'll do wine. I'm a red wine guy.
we'll introduce you to some really great wines when you come here, and we can even do a show together.
Okay, drinking wine. What the wine drunk show. That'd be
Well,
something.
maybe
That'd be an interesting conversation.
we can do a show on Yalta in the Crimea. It's a little piece of heaven.
Okay, sounds good.
And focus on all the wonderful things that really are happening here in the Crimea as a result of its returning to Russia after 2014. Could be a good
Absolutely.
show, a
Absolutely.
historical show.
Loved it. I've only been in Kerch since the return, so I need to go see more of Crimea. So we'll do that
Oh,
this year.
wow. Well, maybe we want to talk about this offline, but
Yeah, we'll do offline. Any details? Don't want to bring any grief onto anybody early on from the other people that may be listening in. Well, not the majority of my audience. We're quite happy with it, but there are some bad apples, I'm sure, from that side that are
yeah,
listening
that's
in.
for
They always
sure.
do. So, everybody, thank you. Thank you for joining us. Regis, thank you. And we'll definitely see you before, I'll talk to you before, and then we'll see you in Crimea.
Well, thank you, Stas. It's always a pleasure and always very enjoyable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll see how Trump rolls. Maybe literally. Cheers, everybody.